Do you find meaning in your work, and how do our daily tasks relate to our purpose in life, has grown out of a number of questions that have been raised in different sessions that deal with our attitude towards towards our lifestyle. Some people have been talking about consumerism as part of the problem that is around us today, and the way we work and how we view our work and what its purpose is and what we get out of it may be related to that consumerism. Other people have been talking about looking for new jobs. They're in between jobs. Some of the staff people here are out looking for a job coming down the pike, and that's been, well, what do I look for? How do I know it's going to be worthwhile? Those things are around. There were two or three other places too, and I forgot at the moment, but that's what led us to this point. So I'll just lead off by saying, do you find meaning in your work? And whatever that may lead you to say, you're welcome to say.
Well, I also thought the ideal thing would be to have a job that would have meaningfulness, paid well, and somehow was happy to do it. I have a friend that's a physician, he's retired now, but I mean, all three of those were in his.
Mm-hmm.
I had a job as an engineer for about 12 years, which is fairly lucrative, but it wasn't meaningful to me particularly. And coming to places like Hold and stuff, I switched to a job now, which is meaningful to me. But sometimes I'm tempted after 8 years to do something that gives me more money. So I've been struggling a little bit with that.
Okay. Thank you. Someone else?
Well, I want to ask, how did you find the job that you were holding the job and you just switched? You just quit?
I just quit a job. In fact, I didn't even, after 12 years. But I thought about it for some time. Because I sort of saw it as part of the church, and I was all interested in the church. The job happens to be fundraising. Sounds odd, and most people wouldn't want to do it anyway. But it's meaningful to me, and I'm helping people, I think, and I'm helping an institution. So, I don't know, I feel like I'm sort of a ministry, you know, in the rain. I don't know if that's what you're looking for exactly.
I just need to talk to you. That's the only way to get easy for you to do this. I mean, you have to take in
I know, and I quit because of this meaningfulness. It was kind of hard to define it, but I just felt like, you know, at times I thought of, in my life, I thought about being a preacher or a minister or something.
What are your style of life that you went from?
Well, I've always been pretty tight, so I never lived up to the salary I had when I was an engineer. So I dropped about $5,000 to $6,000, it didn't hurt me much.
You just don't say much.
I live roughly the same on a way. But it's, you know, inflation after 8 years gets to bite in a little bit, so I start to get a little sensitive.
That was the most wifely well I've heard in quite some time. Go ahead.
Well, at the time he had that job, there were places to put it. Like, I had a mother that was very ill, and it was just really fortunate. And we don't have that. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I find meaning in my work, but I've had to trade it for what a lot of people, I think, would feel as security. And I, by that I mean that I'm in the field of education, but I've never stayed in one place long enough to get tenure, because as soon as there is a, as soon as I feel that I've done what is my particular role in that place or on that particular thing, it's very easy for me to move on. But that affects a lot of things that ordinarily are out of the relation of security.
Are you saying then that the meaning that you get in your job just is more important to you than that security? You just wouldn't hang around for that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that is involved being responsible for the raising of four children. So it isn't just.
Yeah.
I don't think about
yeah.
bringing in some kind of salary, but it has to be meaningful to me, or I would be much more possible to live with an hour at the end.
Somebody else?
Well,
sure.
The question doesn't quite fit my category, but I'm retired. So, you say you're getting. Really, there isn't any work, and yet there is. And maybe there are some, I think there are a few other retired people here. And I think this is becoming a rather important question for retired people, especially those who are still able to do some of the things that they want. I seem to find my retirement quite meaningful, and I seem to be busy, but I don't try to work at anything in particular.
Busier than you.
Good. So it isn't. So the meaning that you have, you continue to have, or
I have to feel like. I guess I feel a little guilty sometimes because I feel like I ought to be contributing more to something. I don't mean financially.
Yeah.
In that way, I sort of feel guilty. And on the other hand, I tell myself not to feel guilty.
Good for you.
Yeah. But I think I am accomplishing something and doing something.
But what you're saying, it's not tied to having a job where some money is coming in that part. There is meaning for you outside of that. Well, that seems to be, you know, something that not everybody can say. Does anybody else want to respond to that or say something himself?
Is that the chief?
That's the chief. That's the chief.
Well, she also helps me. In other ways, sometimes she comes to the office or she goes over a paper or she shortens the sermon. Probably figures she doesn't shorten enough.
People will rise up and call her blessed.
I bring a few home for dinner now and then sometimes it's 30. But she hasn't had tea for more than 125. But she does bring, she brings up many important things. But this helping, I think, in the family situation, I think one of my regrets, I spend most of my time as a scientist, as an experimentalist, working with animals. And I think some of the more happy times were when I could involve the children or my wife in the enterprise to share not only with the results of the experiment or what we were going to do and what we were trying to do. And it's one of these things, many times you can't wait till morning to come, or sometimes you have to work most of the night. But then you have the morning came so you could have breakfast or something. But the point I want to make here is that when I was doing some experiments at the University of Washington, and I was over on a special fellowship, and our son, who was then 13, I was still going to school. Our son was 13, and he did a lot of the work with me on the experiment. So we were sort of doing it together, and I think this is very, very helpful. And Karn, who some of you know, he's the Three Billy Goats grew up. I think she enjoyed it too. She'd come home and that time at the University of California, and we had some aged mice and at Christmas time I always tell my the girl that was the Mouse House manager, she could go home for vacation, and Karen and I would be the Mouse House manager, and, which included autopsying the mice and weighing the organs, and Karen would seem to enjoy this, and we had a really a good time with this, or visiting the animals on weekends and stuff, and I think this makes for a far more enjoyable kind of thing when you can involve it.
I want to speak to this housewife thing, or homemaker. I've been that all my life now, ever since I've been married for 38 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that the society sometimes puts me in a box and gives me a bad time. But I don't let them. I say, when I find some place where I can have as many coffee breaks whenever I feel like it and do whatever I want to, we have an old fellow that always would see me uptown, and I'm kind of, well, I can't say I'm an Elmer Witt, but we used to go to this little place, and we walked every morning, and this was where the little town gathered. This was not in Longview, but it was in Castle Rock where we lived. And you get to talking to everybody, and you got the thing. And it was real, and he'd say, "Aren't you working?" And I said, "You know, no, Fred, I'm not working," you know. And he'd look at me like, "Boy, she must be really lazy." And he had to fight that, but like I say, I don't say I love housework. I used to say I hated it, but I don't. But I can just hurry through, and I can read, and I can. I got very upset in the beauty parlor one day. This girl was saying, you know, "Gee, it's so horrible, you know, being home." She had a child that she had to stay home for, and I said, you know, she said, "She can't do anything." She said, "I'm tied. I'm trapped." And I said, "Well, you know, the kid takes naps, doesn't she?" "Oh, yeah." "Well, you know, while they're napping, you can do lots of things. I mean, you can't leave the house, evidently, but you can read, mm-hmm. you can listen to music, you can do lots of things."
Hmm. Glad for your sharing. You're finding the meaning. Someone else.
I have something to say about housewives.
Please.
It's something I probably won't be for a long, long time, but I really admire the people that are in that position because of the mobility and freedom you have to do what you want. And I really enjoy doing things that I think housewives probably do, quite a bit of cooking and cleaning and reading and listening to music. So I kind of envy your position.
Neat position. Because I'm a grandmother of 14, so I have, you know, I can sit in an elderly position now. You know, rock in my rocking chair like I always said I was going to do. I don't do much wrong with it. But.
I think that I'm with Karen in that I do admire that and envy that, but that's not an option that's open to me. And I need role models for the young woman entering the working fields to find meaning in what I do as a woman. And I have a role model for how to do that in a housewife role, but that's not a role that I can engage in right now, and I probably won't for a long time. And I don't know where I'm going to find those role models or where to get the things that I need to engage in that kind of search.
Are you saying you don't know any women who are working who like what they're doing, or you don't?
I know instructors at a college who are women, but that's kind of a role model, but it's not as direct as say a businesswoman or someone who's a beautician, just working outside of the home. I guess I consider the academic field kind of elite, special. It's different than a 9-to-5 job.
Okay.
And those, no, I don't think I really have those role models.
Okay.
Yeah. I love that hour. You say 9-to-5 is a beautiful hour.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I had a situation something like Dave here, but You've known me for a long time. I got involved, I was a professional and an architect, and I got involved in my thing. I was in town all the time, night meetings, so forth. Okay, never home. And I was sort of drifting their own way. My daughter, went to school and so forth, and my wife, little Kiki and all this, and we never saw each other. And what we did was, we got a farm. We got a farm and we worked that together, and it's a producing farm, raspberry farm. This gave us, just made us face each other and work things out. I think it was very helpful, I think, for our marriage as well as, it did pay for our farm as well. And I was able to work at home then in my architectural business, which I really enjoy. I really enjoy architecture and working with people. And this has worked out real good for us. I think there's a trend to getting couples to share in an occupation or a job. And I think there's more meaning in that. You know what the other person's doing and you appreciate what they're doing. The housewife often doesn't know what the husband's doing at all during the day, and he's too tired to tell her. He gets home and he's actually not doing his family. And vice versa, you don't really care what she's done necessarily. So I think you have to find ways to share your full life, and that's one way I always found.
It is all talked out that I spent 20 years in the role of housewife and motherly, and during that time spent some years in volunteer, and then probably 7 years actively volunteering for the agency that I now work for on the paid staff. And I like my work very much. It is a job which provides lots of opportunities for my own growth and opportunity to be with a lot of different kinds of people. I will say that having a paycheck is pretty neat, and I mean not just the money, but there is really a difference in being on the paid staff and being a volunteer, even though I would be doing a similar thing. And I guess it's what to toss that up, because I find that to be truth for a lot of women, that there is something that happens when there is remuneration for work. And I don't think I'm working as hard now as I was when I was raising a family. And also,
I agree.
I think that was a much, much more difficult, demanding job than looking outside the home.
Yeah.
All right. I was reading Bright Valley of Hope, and just a little while ago before I came down here, and they were telling him about his confirmation, and he said, and they were telling him, your first vocation is always to glorify God, and then the second vocation. Well, I feel very comfortable with number two vocation. What I do professionally, I feel I do very well. I guess my question is, how do I know if I'm doing the number one well?
Someone want to respond to that? Did you get the question? Okay.
I couldn't respond until I knew what he did with his vocation.
Okay.
Pardon?
I couldn't respond until I know what to do with his vocation.
I'm an orthopedic surgeon.
You know what?
I think you better enlarge upon that, though,
Dr. Why, Leo?
You work with cerebral palsy.
Oh, I fix, broken bones, take care of children, I suppose, like in basal, that type of thing. Orthopedic surgery is the surgery of musculoskeletal disease. But, there's a lot of people that do that, but I really wonder, I guess that's the question, is, I feel very comfortable that I do that well, I know what I'm doing, I'm well trained, and I do a good job of that. But does that automatically mean that I do number one well? I guess that's just what I was asking. I don't know how you know that. I was reading the book, half an hour ago, and that came to my mind. And I thought, well, come down and get the answer.
I thought of my father when you were talking, who had a fourth grade education and repaired shoes. And he said he'd always hoped he'd be a minister to serve God, but he didn't get the chance. And so he became content to repair shoes. And he always said, I'm repairing the soul of man.
Mm-hmm.
And people would come into a shop
just to discuss the Bible with him. And yet it all came out of just a fourth grade level. And he felt that he was glorifying God.
When you were talking, I thought of that of a time when I was really searching on behalf of a patient for a Christian doctor. And in this instance, we were looking for a psychiatrist, as a matter of fact. And in all of the Neuropsychiatric Institute at the University of California in Los Angeles, we couldn't find somebody, which was the request of the patient, who was both a psychiatrist and a practicing Christian. That was what the patient wanted and needed. And I never realized till that moment that this was the case in that situation.
Yeah, I have two reactions to that. I'm reading, as some may know, the Gospel of Mark this week, several times. And if our Lord was wondering that same question, he spent an awful lot of time healing. My goodness, that gospel is loaded predominantly with healing. Having said that, the assumption that if you are an ordained minister, you have solved the problem of glorifying God is really not substantiated in fact. That a person would automatically feel that way. No way. I enjoy what I'm doing, and I believe it is to the glory of God. But I believe if I were unordained tomorrow, and I could be, I could leave. My last job, I wrote to 75 different places, half of them outside of the church. I don't in all any way am not convinced that my best work is inside the church. It may be, and as long as it is, I will do that. If it's outside, I'll do it there. But automatically to say if you are an ordained minister and preaching the gospel that you feel you're glorifying God just doesn't wash. I wish it did, but it doesn't. And I'm saying because there are numbers of pastors who are leaving, you know, because they don't feel that what they're doing is glorifying God for them. But the ministry does, of course, but they don't. So, out of the reading of the Gospel of Mark, I thought you had an edge on us. Somebody else.
Well, you remove the mask from the one in need, Dr. Moss, and you find God. Yeah. I think. And I'd like to hear Al. You know, I thought Al was going to.
Yeah,
he found
I did
out
too.
His vocation. He was going to say something. Al, you found out his vocation.
What?
You said you couldn't respond until you did. Go ahead.
I was just wondering.
Yeah.
I think it was very difficult for me to find a real sense of fulfillment working in a religious institution.
Mm-hmm.
Quay, you know, we were training ministers, but not very many, because most of that we wanted to do their own research. In fact, they killed the program, which was the most live and different training ministers. Part of an institution, part of an institution I think that sold out to a certain bad American culture, like some hospitals do, and some medical systems do, in my judgment. I kind of follow village on the medical system here. So that I found a lot of meaning in working with individuals, but not enough for the institution, so much that I really left the institution and milked it and spent my time elsewhere, because I thought it really sold out. There was no hope for it. As a meaningful ministry, except that individuals kind of peripherally through the thrust of the institution. So the happiest time of my life was December 9th, 78, 77, when I retired. And I only had 1 second of it. And I now have one of the happiest jobs, 15 hours a week, $3,000 a year, and 9 months a year. And I work 30, 40 hours a week, 10.5 months a year, and this year, I don't know if you mentioned. But all the strain and pressure of that job and that role, since I think I followed the Peterson School and got to the job just ahead of where I was. And it's trade and the pressure, both in terms of trying to produce and in terms of trying to fight a battle for meeting when the values that I detest and abhor in the society, in terms of just a kind of business machine to turn out students to fill slots, is over against the search for meaning. Seems to be down there. Now, that's a very personal interpretation of what was going on. Other people had quite different, but that was my experience. So I probably spent 20 years in a role that was very destructive. It gave me a lot of status and a lot of chance to do things. But I think in the long run, it was probably fairly destructive. So it's ambiguous. There are pluses and minuses, but right now I'm so happy to get out. There must be a real sense in which it wasn't where I wanted to be. I have no regrets. I didn't want to teach on it. If they invited me, I wouldn't have gone out. They didn't invite me, but there's my sheep. So I think some of these high-powered roles, I don't know, my experience in a high-powered role in a high-powered institution, a very state, you know, role, makes me wonder whether it was worth it. And so every time I say to my friends and members of my community, say, but you had it, you can talk that way, you were there.
Well, you know, on stated, could I just say a little bit on stated? I think Al brought up a very important point. I think I shared the story with you and Al. And while I'm doing this, maybe I think you might want to call on Pearl, too. She should say something if she feels like it after I finish. As Pastor, as Paul said tonight, and it's a very simple thing, but I like simple things. You know, you bloom where you're planted. I think I told you about the story. In large corporations, they often have attitude surveys, and we had it when I was at General Electric Company. Find out where the people are and if there's something that can be improved at my health situation. And they did a rather intensive survey in one plant in General Motors. And in analyzing the survey, it was very surprising to everyone to find out that, at least from their interpretation, I guess it depends on who's interpreting it, the person that seemed to know the most about the plant overall as to how things were functioning, and also would seem to really be enjoying his work, what was a one given scrap collector. He kept very close track of what scrap he picked up from each department. Some departments were, of course, doing the same thing, and he could tell you who was functioning more economically, who was taking better care of what they were doing, who were wasting material. And he checked into what each metal was being used for. Now this was, of course, above and beyond the call of duty. But he knew this, and he took his time, or took maybe extra time, to find out this, because it was very fascinating for him to find this out. And they were amazed at how much he knew about the plant. This was a fellow that he was really enjoying what he was, what he was doing, and making a what might be a routine kind of a thing, an exciting kind of thing. And so it's very important, I think, to one's attitude towards a given situation. I was very frustrated in my present position until I realized that, I'm in a position I was sure I never wanted, in a place I said I'd never come back to. But until I realized that interruptions were my business.
Yes, please.
We have a young attorney in our congregation who's rather fresh to the Christian life. He had written a letter to a party who was to come and see him. There was a judgment against him. Instead of ending up
know, reading the book to her, sensing her difficulties, as I think, I'd like to suggest that we pray about this. And I'm not saying this is the case every time. Instead of ending up, reading the book to her, sensing her difficulties, as I think, I'd like to suggest that we pray about this. And I'm not saying this is the case every time, but our good doctor here was asking what he might do to put the number one emphasis or whatever. And I don't know if you see yourself in this kind of a role, doctor, but I have the feeling that it just might fit. And you'd find yourself in an exceedingly exciting area of human experience in terms of physical as well as perhaps spiritual health. Maybe you're already doing it, I don't know. And one other Bible verse that again ties in with this. Whatever you do in word or in deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. I think this is Paul, probably Colossians. And I think that would fit in an awful lot of occupations. We wouldn't even need to look for role models. We could just be one in Christ.
But we're not always at that point. We're not all at that point, though, right? I want to be careful that we don't imply that anybody can do that. Because some people are at stronger points and at weaker points. So we have to be very careful about people being at all different levels of the faith. We hope that people can grow to what they can be. I surely agree with what you said. I don't think it would be any better if he prayed, myself. Maybe you do. I think it would be any more of the glory of God.
I think this can become sort of a routine that you go through.
I think he glorified God with that knife. That's where he glorifies God. I think that's the glory of God. I believe that with all my heart. Now, praying is also a thing to do for the glory of God. I don't think it makes his knife any better. His whole life is an act of prayer, and I believe that because of his commitment to Christ. And if someone needs that signal, that might be important. I personally don't, but that's what we can talk about if you wanted to. Yeah.
Well, evidently there must be some area
that
you might that he's wondering about, or he wouldn't have asked the question about glorifying God.
I won't guess. You'll have to ask him.
I'm sure there are in all of our lives. Two doctors, two physicians in our town come to my mind when I'm talking about this. And they had a similar question in their mind. And one happens to be Lutheran, the other happens to be from an Alliance church. And they found they were able easily to talk with each other about faith and their patients and so on. And they work in the same hospital and all. But they share concerns. Every Saturday morning, they get together with another fellow who is a school teacher. And they asked, these two doctors asked the school teacher if he would kind of disciple them in a way, just guide them, help them. This other fellow's had, school teachers had quite a bit of training. And the doctors get together and they pray about certain patients, just concerns, maybe things that are heavy on their mind, things that they can be like-minded about. In these ways, they found that the burden was a little lighter. They found that their glorifying God maybe was clarified a little. And they also, once in a while, have a Bible study, short, maybe not, maybe just prayer, maybe just talk. So,
thank you.
I don't really want to talk about medicine. I do serve on the board of a health clinic, and the problem in the health clinic is a guy who's interested in preventive medicine takes about three times as long with his patients as the others, And he talks about food, about exercise, mm-hmm. about all the things it takes in 45 minutes, but he's pulling his load. And that's a discussion in our board. And I think our roles are very complex in terms of very concrete issues like mm-hmm. that. If we really don't give placebos to 75% of people who come to doctors, what do we do with our building up our practice? If we really tell the truth and begin to talk about meaning, about exercise, and about all the things that are related to health, now that takes a lot of time, but the patients were really unhappy with this guy. They reported they're unhappy with this group. They didn't they weren't given physical or chemical. I'd just like to return to my personal position. I think it's where we want to stay as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
That when I was gunning for all of this, 1 year my family stayed in Columbus and I was in Chicago, and my younger son would cry, really, when I left, and my daughter was born that year that I left. Well, they came to Chicago for 3 years and lived on $3,000 a year, with six of us and so forth. There was I really put them through the ringer. And very ambiguous for them and for my wife. And I don't know how I would have the time that I now have, being in a very peculiar situation with a son, that I could attend to. I could lie on the floor and play with him for half an hour with the greatest of joy and no sense that I should be reading a book or advancing my career. I have kind of freedom. It's just remarkable. Now maybe that isn't wonderful in terms of their roles and their jobs and their part of as I look back on it, and maybe I just been manifest. Seems like a different world. I never had that time. Even if I were present, I had all that pressure to produce on me all the time.
Somebody else want to respond?
I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes if the question, instead of being, how do I tell if I'm doing a number one job,
mm-hmm.
I feel that this is the question that's being asked here. Probably if we ask the question of ourselves, am I doing the job that God intended for me to mm-hmm. do? And then from that point on, I don't have to know whether I'm doing a number one job or not. Am I doing the best I can at the job I'm supposed to be doing?
Yeah, that's what I heard him saying. He said, as far as his job's doing, he thought he was doing a very good job, but he wasn't sure it was a glorifying God. That was his question. But I hear you saying, you're asking, can you say, this is what you think God wants you to do?
Yes. If you're doing mm-hmm. the job.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I'm going to give a personal explanation here. So I don't know for what it's, you take it for what it's worth. But when I was a young fellow, and I was in blacksmith work and that sort of thing, but there was a game lane, I found that I would need to do something else. But I wanted to be an engineer. And on the other hand, my mother wanted me to be a minister, and I thought I wanted to be a minister too. In a way, I couldn't decide. I prayed about it. And this was in the days when we listened to radio mm-hmm. with the antenna. And I'm trying to think of the year, about 1926, I think. Mm-hmm. I was teaching the 7th and 8th grade on a standard certificate, which meant 2 years of college. And it was pretty good at that time. Question was, should I go back and get the other 2 years and go on teaching, or go on to whatever else I was going to do? And for some reason I stayed that weekend in the town where I taught, and turned on the radio in the home where I stayed, and listened to a man by the name of Brown preach from Omaha. In those days, we listened to stations far away.
Oh.
And he paraphrased the first part of John. And there was a man named John, called of God, to teach, or to preach. And his sermon went on, and he asked each of us to put our own names in there, and about doing the job that we're doing. And there was a man named Vic Davidson, called of God, to teach. I felt that way.
Hmm.
I felt I substituted my mother's name in there, called of God to be a mother, and I felt good about that. My dad was a blacksmith, and a good one. And I felt good about how he fit into that. I put several people's names in there, and then I came back to my own again and felt that that must be the job. And I did feel then that I had a definite calling to be a teacher. And so I remained as a teacher.
That's great.
Now, I had satisfaction in that. Did I get meaning from a feeling of sense? Well, it wasn't all pleasure, I can tell you that. Period I went through it, but I felt like I was doing what the good Lord wanted me to do, and if I was doing that, I was glorifying Him. Whether I would be a teacher, or whether I would be a housewife, or whether I would be a veterinarian, or whether I'd be a doctor, whatever it would be. And I think this is a thing that I would like to get across to other young people.
I think what's helpful for any of these people, especially young, to read Einar Billing's Our Calling.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that's our own Conrad Bergendorf translator?
Yes.
Really a great book.
Very small.
Yes. And I also mentioned that a little while ago,
I was hoping to hear, I thought Pearl or her son ought to give her story. When you've been had a good marriage for 12 years and had 8 or 9 children, and your husband dies, and you raise the children, I think that's a story worth hearing.
I don't know where I'd be at. Well, I know that I'm very thankful that I have a family to be proud of. I have 8 children, 5 boys and 3 girls. They have meant so much to me, and especially at this time that my 2 here brought me here. And I received so much here that I'm going to go home with a lot of goodies. And also, I just want to break in here about the Mott's, to tell what Mr. Mott's was explaining it, the first thing that he mentioned. I think you already showed this. He even offered to take me, let me stay one more day here if I chose to stay one more day, and he would see that I went home with a family. Mm. So there's one thing in his favor that he certainly has the Lord in his mind, because you don't do that unless you really had a touch of something that the Lord has given me to do this. So I'm encouraged. These folks have been just great in our church too. I haven't known them very long, but. But I
Pearl, talk about Pearl.
No,
Pearl.
I
can't do it.
Well,
Pearl
dies. Well, anyway, I don't know where to start. But I know that the camp that I'm working at, that has given me a lot of joy. And, of course, cooking in the kitchen, seeing a lot of kids satisfied that they've had their tummy filled. And I don't know in my senior years now whether if I should be semi-retired for a while and then be retired. But anyway, I know whatever the Lord has in store for me, I want to do what He would like me to do. But as of yet, still going back to the camp and cook for retreat. But I also like to go out and call on people at the hospitals and enjoy that sort of ministry.
and also shut-ins and that type of thing. I like to spread myself around a little bit that way because it gives me satisfaction that with others that I like to visit with, besides being at the camp, of course. At the time that I was left alone with my family, I still wasn't alone. My children, I had to inspire and to live for. But I know I had a husband that I always told my children if they could live and be half as good as their dad, I'd be proud of them. And I have been grateful for that. We, of course, have had to struggle along and sort of, as my children have said, quite a few of them have mentioned that their childhood days were not like other kids because they couldn't have everything. But when I look back to 12 years that I had my husband, my whole family, I have no regret because as I look into other people's lives and what they've gone through, God has been so good to me. My brother and my husband were both killed in an airplane accident. But the Lord is so wonderful to give grace at a time of need. He didn't leave me desperate. The verse that comes to mind that gave me a lot of, that lifted me up, was the Lord shall sustain thee, the righteous shall not be moved. And as he gave me that sustaining, well, that was such a help. But, and then to see what others went through in before this, gave me that extra sustaining that I could see what they had gone through, made it easier for me. And what the joy of the whole thing is, and it was that I know where they, that where my brother and my husband are, because it was really, my husband used to say, one of the two things I like to do best, and that's to fly and preach the word. So he was a lay preacher, and he was helping missions and that type of thing. And up at Mountain View, where we attended all these years, it's like we're still attached to that church because the people there were just wonderful to me at the time of this, what happened in our life, but they were always there to be so good to our family and all. But we had friends that we covet and enjoy so much. Well, I don't know where else to stop, but I think I better stop.
Well, thank you much.
A wife should never speak for her husband, but I feel like Pearl is one of the reasons that Don has the question that he has, because wherever Pearl is and whatever she does, you immediately know that here is a Christian lady. Mm-hmm. The way she acts, the way she speaks, everything about her says, this woman loves our Lord. And although what Don does, I think he has incredible skill, mm-hmm. and it certainly is a gift from God, and it certainly does praise God, his every movement when he's in the operating room. I think he wonders if perhaps it might have more meaning, or he might fulfill the calling better, if all his patients, all the nurses, everyone he came into contact with knew that he was a Christian man. Now, many of them do, but many of them come and go and never know.
Well, I think in that situation, I think if he just is himself, I think would be the greatest thing. In the office that I work, I've been there now about 10 years, and when I first came to that office, it was an office where they would, they would tell off-color jokes and things like this. And I just would not laugh. Stone sober, you know. And after now, during this period of time, that office is completely reversed, completely turned around. It's you don't hear any more of that. Several of the people here have come to the Lord, and I haven't said anything. They know where I stand. I think that's important.
I'm going to say something about Pastor Dixie up there. You know, when I didn't realize when I was talking to him, I go, while what he was listening to, I had no idea. But, you know, when he spoke up in the church, or I mean at the meeting here that night, the other evening, I thought, boy, you've got to be careful what you say to him.
And it does come for different people in different ways. I mean, maybe you can't be that other person at all. Maybe that's hers. And that we have to be our own self to do that. That kind of style works for some and surely doesn't work for other people.
Well, I like the way he started out. He had his priorities very much in order, and that speaks to me because there's a lot of people that don't have their priorities that way. I mean, the Lord is not first in their life, and he's not.
Well, I was helped by reading the book.
I don't know. I read a lot, too. I think that speaks highly.
Good.
One thing that I wonder is that if you're not able to be retired right now, have kind of what you described is a really neat ideal situation, but if you work in an environment which is essentially, no matter how well it might be paid or all of the by American standards, a great place to work, if it's a hostile environment in terms of some of the values that you want to get away from, then I think the kind of support system you described can be very important to helping bring meaning into your work, where you identify other persons with similar values, because we can't all just drop it all in there.
You have that kind of support system for your work, don't you?
Yes, I am, but I don't know that I could survive without it. I just want to reinforce that.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of going through some of the same thing you're going through, except I see what you're doing, and you're working with people, and you're healing people, and just looking from the outside, it seems like that would bring a lot of satisfaction and a lot of meaning to it. Before coming out here, I worked in the computer field for a while, and I mean, I worked with machines 8 hours a day, every day. I didn't have a lot of contact with people, and I finally quit. It was a well-paying job. I was under a lot of pressure when I told people what I was doing. I'm the electrician at Holden now, and it took a huge cut in pay. But I could not figure out any way I was glorifying God in my work. It was very frustrating for me. I just worked on this blasted equipment that could think, 10 times as fast as anyone in this room, and it got very irritating. I felt good about quitting, but even with that, I received quite a bit of pressure from my family. Not my mother, thank God. She's been out here before, and she knows what Holden is like, and she was overjoyed that she got the job, but I received a lot of pressure from my peers and from my family. Losing a, quote, good job, which had no meaning at all for me, and good pay, and coming out to a job with no permanence, really, and poor pay. That's so difficult for me.
Are you glad you've made the change?
Oh, yeah, I am.
That would be interesting.
Well, up here, there is a lot of satisfaction. This is an only temporary thing, too. There's a 2-year limit on my time up here. And I'm not sure where I want to go from here, but... and yet, I'm working with machines, and yet I feel some meaning behind that up here. I guess when people aren't complaining up here, I'm happy because I know the place is operating okay.
What's the basic difference in the two jobs then now?
I guess here I see the result of my work. I see people come up and they're really, you know, they're pleased with Goldman. And maybe they don't see the background that I do, the hydro, under the buildings and the attics and things. But I know that part of the reason that they're happy here is because they're physically comfortable. They're happy to be able to, to sit in lighted rooms. And I guess I get satisfaction out of that. When I was working on computers, they disappeared. I was done with my machine and it was gone. And then another one was rolled in.
That was indirectly serving people, like a lot of jobs, very indirect in the way they serve people in their job.
I guess it was. I just couldn't see that.
I guess that's what I hear him say. For him, it wasn't. And I would think that his cousin, maybe in the same job next door, that if he got meaning out of it, you'd say great about that. And that he wouldn't have to come to Holden to find meaning. He could find it with a computer. If a computer isn't a gift of God, we're in bad shape. Because you can abuse Holden, and you can abuse a computer.
You know, when I couldn't work on a computer, if the computer were serving one of the outfits that's trying to pour milk in the South America and destroying the babies down there, the whole way of life,
Sure. You couldn't, and maybe somebody else next to you who's a fine Christian could.
You ask some questions about the meaning of the institution.
I surely would. But the same would be about Holden, the people that get wrecked at Holden. I've seen them. I've counseled with them. Same thing is true about Holden Village. We'd have to be careful about that one.
I agree.
Right.
You said something earlier about the health situation and I was catching something about...
you
feel that people were taking too long with
their
doctors, or is this what I heard you saying?
No, the doctor who was spending the time really caring for his patient was not fitting into the system, so the system could function and make money. He lost money for the system because he cared for the patient, and the doctor who would send him through routinely kept the system functioning. So.
Sounds like the Mayo Clinic. But I think the caring one, basically, to me, as being the patient, would be the one that I would think was glorifying God or doing his job according to, whether he was, maybe he's slowing down the system, but he certainly sounded like the one that was really...
He was withdrawn, he works half-time and all. I mean, he is simply withdrawn from that great big productive system of America. But when he works, but he cares about people. He cares about them just the way he cares about his own health. With, the jogging, jagging, and all the rest of the stuff.
Well, I had a breakdown, and there was not a Christian psychiatrist or anybody to counsel, and that's a very scary situation, particularly when you're a Christian. And, I'm telling you, if you have a Christian conviction and you are in the field of medicine, whatever field, especially, the psychological or psychiatric part, then I think you should affirm your patient whether they want to hear it or not. I think that you should tell them that you are a committed person. Because somehow that would mean healing for that person.
Okay, it's 10 o'clock.